Hello there. Welcome to Cool Climate Living. I'm Susan Lacey. In today's program, I'm going to talk about something that, as adults, is a distant memory. Since school is such an important part of our life as children, how did we get there? For children living in rural and isolated areas, it's both a challenge and an experience that they never forget. The school bus service is an important part of the life of country kids. And today I'll be talking to someone about the challenges before school buses were around, and two others who drove and still drive those school buses and the very precious memories they have. Now, my first guest today is Keith Harvey. Keith was born in Oberon in Nurse Fox's Maternity Hospital, and everybody in Oberon will know exactly who I mean by that. He was born in 1936. And today he's going to talk to us about how he got to school before there were actually any school buses. Keith, thank you very much for joining the program today.
Pleasure to be here.
Now, Keith, how did you get to school and how old were you when you first started?
Well, I'd have been five, I think, when I first went to school at Edith from my grandmother's property, which was a bit closer than what we were to a school.
Mm.
So we actually walked. It was across country and it would have been about a couple of miles probably. But it seemed to be quite the normal thing to do those days.
Mm.
And quite some kids rode horses to school. I remember one family, three boys at Edith, they came to school in a sulky. But I only went to Edith for a short time, and then they tried to keep the Norway school open. That's out on the Goulburn Road. And it was about the same distance away, but we had to go across the river and to another property. That was 1942, I remember, but there weren't enough pupils to keep the school open, so they closed it down. And then they opened another school, what they call Mozart, a bit further out. And so we had to go to Oberon. And there, where we lived on the property was about 4 miles from town.
So were you still walking to school at this stage?
Yeah, we had to walk. We had no other way of going. And
what about the going? Did it snow? How did you get to school?
Oh, well, you didn't go to school. You got a day off.
Right.
But then my father got a couple of bikes. And of course, 1942, the war was going, things were getting short. And we were a long way in off the road because of the way the property was developed. Didn't seem to take that long to go on a bike. It was pretty level going. But then they started building the Oberon Dam, and the Oberon Dam cut the road off and covered the bridge. So they had to build another road, which became 7 miles.
Mm.
Which was too far. So then for a while we rode our bikes over as far as we could go towards near the dam, walked around the dam wall, and they used to run the kids from the workers at the dam, they got driven to school, so we got a ride from there up to town with them. And then later on we walked across the river over what is the golf course near, which wasn't very far, really. Might have been 3 miles that way. Remember those days going up there, and Oberon Dump was on top of it used to be known as the Pound Hill or the Town Common. The Town Dump was there, so there was old motor cars and things like that, and we used to get these car wheels and run them down the hill into the dam. Going to Norway school, I remember one incident. We were going to school this morning, and there was a old Chev truck. It had broken down like they used, which was pretty common those days.
Mm.
And this bloke had apparently been cranking it and trying to start it, but he got knocked. When we came along, he was lying down, all asleep, I guess.
Mm.
And I remember saying to my brother, I think this bloke's dead. But he sat up and said he wasn't. And a few incidents like
thank
that.
Thank God for that.
And I can remember another time going to school. It would have been 1942, I guess, that the Americans were in the war by this time, and we were going to school up past where the dam buildings are now, and there's a lot of Americans on motorbikes. They were on some exercise, and they were coming down past and going out of sight up the other side. There must have been 100 of them.
Oh.
And it was quite an impressive sight when you're a little boy.
I bet. Did they give you a... Did they give you a ride?
We got a few waves as they went past. It was some exercise.
I guess being out in the open and having to walk to school or ride to school, did you have any sort of encounters with magpies swooping you, or kangaroos all over the place, or...
There weren't many kangaroos about those days, but I remember going to school one morning to Edith, and there's a paddock they called the 40 Acres, and this magpie come out of nowhere and cracked me on the head and drew a bit of blood. And I got to school and I thought I was sort of fairly badly done by, but he got plastered with iodine. That's when to fix it up. It really wasn't that bad, but I thought it was pretty terrible at the time.
Yeah, they can be fierce.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Well, at the Edith School, there was a magpie there. You had to get a branch over your head when you went up, coming to school and going away. Yeah. It was only seasonal, though, when they were breeding. That was a pretty common thing, fierce magpies.
You had to walk over a few rivers and stuff like that too, didn't you?
Yeah, well, we were on the Fish River, where the Oberon Dam is now. It went round in a sort of a right angle. Two sides of our property were river frontage.
Mm.
And not a very big river, but when the river was low, well, there was rocks you could get a walk across on. But if there was a lot of rain, well, the river got too high. And when that happened, we had a Land Rover, and I used to drive it round down what's known as Kelly's Bay now and walk to school from there. And I was always hoping for rain so I could get to drive a Land Rover.
How old were you when 14, you were driving? 14.
Yeah.
Yeah, I reckon the country kids learnt to drive.
Oh, yes, I learnt to drive.
For exactly that reason.
Yeah. Oh, well, you learn to drive around the property, tractors and motor vehicles. But, yeah, I mean, my father bought the first Land Rover in Oberon, or the first privately owned one. They did have a couple in the PWD, and I learned to drive. They were quite easy to drive.
You must have felt pretty special driving it to school.
Oh, I'd like to have driven it all the way to school, but that wasn't permissible.
Oh, okay.
At the partway, but those days kids drove on the main roads with their father, of course, but it wasn't exactly legal, but no one took much notice of it. And
yeah.
You'd go to get your licence and the police, and it used to be issued at the police station, then they'd probably say, well, it's about time you come and got a licence.
Yeah.
They knew what was going on, but they didn't take much notice of it, though.
Yeah,
they?
Well, you all had to get to school somehow, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. Well, then in the finish, they started the school bus runs on the Goulburn Road, so we walked from home over onto the Goulburn Road, and a bloke by the name of Jack Atchell, he had a bus run from Bathurst, and he did the school bus run, and then when it was all over, we had to go back to Bathurst.
So did he own the bus or the bus company? Or?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yes, he had a regular run from Bathurst to Oberon.
Mm.
And, of course, coming out from Bathurst, he'd pick the kids up on that road. They were always early for school.
Yeah.
He had to come out early and then do this other school bus run. He also ran a bus to the Janelle and Coes on Sundays. And, of course, it was only a small bus, of course. The buses of the day wouldn't get down the Oberon side.
No.
Around the hairpin bends.
Exactly. And so when you were finally getting onto the school bus to go to school, this would have been in your final year at school,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah.
Were you all sort of nicely behaved and
did
everything the driver told you to do?
Oh, yeah, a few muck-ups. We had one kid on the road, a bit of a rogue. They put him off once. He lived down there towards Essendon Park, but he ran, well, there's a ladder up onto the top of the bus to put luggage on. He just ran round the back and climbed up the ladder and got off when he got to his gate. I know. I think I was all pretty well behaved. Well, kids would muck up a bit sometimes and get roused on.
Yeah.
It wasn't too bad.
Yeah, it must have been a relief not to have to keep walking.
Oh, yes. It was a bit of a walk over to the road, but it wasn't that far.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, then after I left school, the dam came up higher, and my younger sister and brother, they had to row a boat across the dam first.
Really?
Then walk over. It's a wonder they didn't drown themselves.
Good heavens.
Yeah.
Yeah, I tell you what, adventurous times, really, weren't they?
Oh, yeah. Oh, we used to have a lot of adventures those days. Of course, back in those times, there was all rabbits everywhere, and you spent the weekends trapping rabbits and make a few bob. And oh, yes, and everything seemed to be a bit of an adventure.
Probably a good childhood to look back on.
Oh, yes. I don't remember anything that I regretted. You'd come home a bit tired sometimes, though. I often wish I was a bit closer to school.
Yeah, yeah, I bet.
But,
especially all that long walking when you're a little kid.
Oh, yeah.
And what are your thoughts about kids getting to school these days? I mean, I figure probably that a lot of the kids these days whose houses are a long way from the front fence, yeah. I bet they're all learning to drive the car just the same as you did when you were young. Yeah,
they would be. But, well, the bus runs everywhere now. Of course, they bring children in from way out, Port Retreat. All the small outlying schools that used to be here have closed down and they all come in on buses now, which is a lot better because they get a... The old one-teacher schools, they did a terrific job, but they couldn't give them the sort of variety of subjects they can give in a bigger school.
Yeah.
So it's better that way. And even the kids in town catch buses. Well, some of them could probably walk. Back in when I was going to school, the town kids, most of them rode their bike to school, and they were propped up against the side of the school, and if you was in there first, you had to wait till the other kids come and got their bikes before you could get yours to go home.
Yeah.
They were packed one on top of the other.
Yeah.
There was no racks. Few rode horse. There wasn't many rode horses those days. I can remember a couple of kids coming on horseback. I think we had more fun those days than the kids do now in a lot of ways.
Well, a different kind of fun, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I can remember one activity we used to do. You'd get bull ants fighting. You'd get a matchbox and get a bull ant from one nest and get another one from another nest and put them together. And they'd fight like Kilkenny cats. And we found that red bulldog ants would always beat the black ones.
Would they? Oh, you know, I've never heard of that one.
Oh, yeah. Or he'd get a bulldog ant and put him down a spider's hole. He'd fetch the spider out.
Oh, I bet you. Oh, gosh. Did you enjoy school?
Oh, yes, I didn't mind. I wasn't the best college school, but I was generally up in the top half. I didn't find it all that difficult. But I often reckon the kids on the bottom end must have been doing it hard because it wasn't easy. Oh, I didn't think it was, but I managed to get through all right. Finished up, we did the intermediate certificate, that was as far as I got. But the day after I left school, I found I was on a tractor working ground up to grow peas.
Oh, is that right?
So I didn't really
So this is your chosen profession by your father,
pretty
no
much,
doubt.
Yeah, pretty much. I didn't actually intend to stay on the land, but it happened that way.
Yeah.
And
you stayed there, didn't you?
Oh, yes. Well, the place was still being cleared when I left school. There's still a couple of paddocks still on in timber. So I cleared them up and then grew peas on them. Sort of more or less got stuck with it.
Yeah.
But then later on, farmers not great at paying their sons and they don't get a lot of money. So then I went out and they used to be spreading the superphosphate with aeroplanes. We went out carting it off the railway out to the airstrips. Went up as far as Mudgee and out Cowra, all over the central west. And we got into some pretty rough places, out towards Hill End and places like that. The roads were steep. I remember a few adventures there, getting into airstrips. They were fairly wet years. Sometimes we had to get a tractor to pull us in and things like that. I was never much of a sportsman. I was never much good at cricket or tennis and things like that, but I found that I wasn't a bad shot.
Oh, okay. And
my favourite sport is the shooting sports.
Yep.
I do a bit of clay target shooting. I used to be in a rifle club.
Yep.
And we used to have fox drives. And even now I go out with a whistle and whistle foxes up and get them. A few years ago, the skins were worth good money, so we sort of, it was quite a payable
sport. I wish you'd come out to my place. Do you do hares as well?
Oh, yeah. We can do that. I'm looking for some good shooting country.
Keith, thank you very much for joining me today. We've been hearing from Keith Harvey. Keith has lived around the Oberon district all of his life, had a really fascinating childhood and clearly has really fond memories of that time.
Hello.
Thanks very much today, Keith.
Pleasure.
And I should add too, by the way, that today is actually a very special day for Keith and his wife Bronwyn. They're celebrating their 52nd wedding anniversary, and congratulations to you both.
Thank you.
Well done. Now, my next guest is going to be John Allen. John has been involved in the transport industry for decades. And more recently, he was involved in driving a school bus in a rural district. John, thanks very much for joining the program.
Hi, Sue.
John, how did you get involved in school buses?
Quite by accident. In 1969, I decided with some friends that I wanted to see Australia and got a job driving tourist coaches. That was a great way to see the country and get paid for it and meet lots of interesting people. And the nature of the company that I worked for was that tourists have high and low seasons, obviously, and they also had school bus runs. So when it was quiet, they used to ask us to do school bus runs. So that was my beginning.
So how was the school bus different to a tourist bus?
Oh, it's much more structured, obviously, and you're dealing with children and a totally different type of vehicle.
Of the driving that you've done around the local area, you are picking up kids of what age?
Oh, they range from, in some cases, preschool, because we service some of the preschools, right through to year 12.
And they're all waiting for you on time at the gates?
Not necessarily on time. Sometimes you have to look up the driveway or down the side street to see whether or not they're running or mum's tearing down the street in the car to try and catch the bus.
Right. I know that as some of the kids get a bit older, and if their house is a long way from the front gate, that this is pretty much their first driving experience. They're driving a car down to the front gate. Did you see much of that happening?
In the country, yes, you see lots of that, where they drive in on their properties, not on public roads, but will drive maybe 1.5-2 kilometres down to a gate on the road where they meet the bus, and then in the afternoons, of course, the car's there to take them home.
Yes. Yeah, it's a very good learning experience.
It is.
They get to learn to dodge kangaroos, I suppose, rather than other cows.
Sheep, cows.
Yeah. What are the kids like that join your school bus?
Oh, the kids in the main are good. You have to establish some ground rules in the early days when you first get onto a school bus run. The kids always want to test you out to see how far they can push you, but you need to establish some ground rules. The younger ones are fairly easy to convince that you're in charge. The older ones, not always so easy, but in the end, you generally win out if you're persistent and let them know which lines they can't cross, and they usually comply.
So what kind of testing did they give you?
All sorts of things, jumping around the bus, not wearing seat belts, bad language, singing out, you name it, they can do it.
Yes.
Throwing fruit around, all sorts of things.
That's normal sort of childhood behaviour probably.
Yeah.
Especially when their parents are away.
Yeah, and the older boys and girls always want to sit down the back of the bus and, you know, a little bit of romance. So,
so sometimes you develop a good relationship with the kids who are regularly on your bus, I suppose.
You do, yeah. To be successful at it, you need to develop a good relationship with the kids because they do have to do what you ask them to do. There's a lot of safety involved in it. Mm. And once you establish that relationship, the kids are wonderful, particularly the little ones. They love baking, and I think I must have put on a few kilos because we always had kids bringing me biscuits and cakes. And one little girl locally used to make Rocky Road and bring that along, and it was really good. I never say no to chocolate.
Are there any particular incidents that sort of stand out to you in the time that you were driving around here?
In the rural and regional areas, one of the problems is the isolation some of the kids live in, and there were some issues with parents that had issues with alcohol and or drugs who should be there to meet children at somewhat isolated locations who sometimes just wouldn't be there. And then that was a dilemma with the little ones because technically your responsibility ends when the child steps off the bus, but obviously you can't, in all good conscience, just leave them in the middle of nowhere waiting for a parent that you know is not going to turn up.
Yeah, that'd be difficult. So what was the solution?
Generally try and contact the parent or family member on the telephone. Sometimes if it was the mother, you'd ring the father or vice versa and make arrangements to take the child on to another stop where the other parent would meet. But as I said, you just couldn't leave them in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, hopefully that didn't happen too often.
Not too often, but there's sometimes those instances.
Well, I guess that families who are living on remote areas are busy just working on the property.
They are. I mean, it's a busy time, and especially when you have times like we have currently with severe drought and bushfires. But a big part of it was communication. We had most of the parents' phone numbers, and they knew the driver's phone numbers, and so they would communicate if there'd been an issue on the farm or something had happened, a tractor had broken down, they would ring and you'd make alternate arrangements. Sometimes it might be take the child back into town and a grandparent would meet you back in town, but it's just all about having that communication.
Yeah, it sounds as if you have to be enormously flexible.
Yeah.
What about certain times for kids, for instance, when they had a birthday? Did you have any sort of fun events on the bus?
Not so much on the bus, but you always knew when it was their birthday because they would make sure that they told you a couple of days out just in case you were, you know, to turn up with something like a piece of candy or something like that for their birthday.
Yeah.
And obviously you have to be careful with that stuff because of allergies and things like that. But the little ones were very good at letting you know their birthday was tomorrow or the day after.
Yeah, I think a lot of them are just really sweet, aren't they?
They are, yeah, they're lovely.
Yeah.
And the little ones in particular tend to confide in you and tell you a lot more about what's going on in their families than you probably really need to know. But they're very open and they're very honest.
Yeah.
They were wonderful to work with. They're great.
And what about the older kids? I mean, they were high school kids on your bus as well, weren't they?
They were.
And presumably going through the normal dreadful stages of adolescence that, you know, we all went through probably at the same age.
True, except nowadays they spent most of their time either with their noses on their mobile phones once you had service, and a lot of them used to read on the buses. I had one little girl who, as soon as she got on the bus, would always have a nose in a book, and she read all sorts of incredible stuff and was always wanting to talk about what she was reading, so...
Oh, right. Mm. So she'd sit up near the front and...
Sat up in the front seat always and always had a book.
Oh, that's wonderful. Any funny stories, John?
Yeah. One of the funny stories was a little girl on the school bus who was an avid watcher of morning television. And I picked her up this morning and she got on the bus and said, John, have you heard about this event? And it was a major event at the time. And I said, yes. And she said, I saw it on television this morning and I ran to tell Mummy and Daddy, but they were in the shower together. And, you know, that's far more information than I needed. But the kids were really good at, you know, giving you that level of detail.
Yes, I bet they were. And how satisfying did you find it as a driver with all these kids from such different age groups?
It's very satisfying because they're just good fun to work with. In the main, you have odd ones that are a problem, but under Transport for New South Wales regulations, there are means and ways of dealing with that, which hopefully you don't need to use, which can involve them being banned off the bus for a period of time. But in the main, it was good fun. Look forward to it.
And what about the time when you were driving the tourist bus? I mean, what sort of differences were there driving kids around who were tourists compared to local
kids? We used to do a lot of work with particularly Japanese school children back in those days, and they all had immaculate uniforms on. Everybody looked the same. They were incredibly well behaved and almost painfully polite, and they were fascinated in everything they saw in Australia. They particularly loved the wildlife, but bringing them out to places like the Central West, which we did, a lot of Japanese children in years gone by were hosted by families in Bathurst, and they absolutely loved the outdoors and the space because they just don't see that. And it was great fun to see them reacting to all of this and going home and have had a wonderful experience here in Australia.
And I'm sure they would have thanked you profusely.
Oh, yes.
As they left the bus.
Yes. There were lots of photos and lots of cuddles and bowing and scraping, and it was all good fun.
Yeah, that sounds good. Do you think that now that so many families have, say, two cars, that school buses are going to still be needed?
Yeah, I think more so than ever because of the pressure that's on parents both having to work these days, and obviously as the kids get older, they can make their own way to the stop, or in some cases, parents make arrangements with neighbours to get kids there. So I think it will go on in the future, the numbers in most cases are going up, not down.
Now, you've mentioned that you had to establish ground rules with the kids. What about safety on the bus?
Safety's of paramount importance on the school buses, things like children being encouraged to wear seat belts. They tend not to, but you have to advise them. It's just like in their parents' car. There is a requirement. They do have to wear them. And one of the biggest concerns is letting children off that have to cross busy roads and mum or dad are sitting in the car on the other side of the road and don't get out to come and get them to cross the road. The drivers legally aren't allowed to get out of the bus to help them cross the road. You're not allowed to leave the bus. And that's where a lot of accidents happen because the kids either run out from in front or behind the bus. So you really, as a parent, you really do need to make the effort, get out of the car, come over, get the children off the bus and walk them across the street.
Yeah, and presumably also make sure that you're there to collect the child at the front gate.
On time, yes.
Yes. Is it difficult to convince the kids that safety is important?
Not so much now, because they're so used to the television advertising in so far as wearing seatbelts, and they know they have to wear them when they go in the car with mum and dad, so it's really just explaining to them that the rule in the bus is the same. If there's a seatbelt there, you have to put it on. And here in the Central West, where we get some snow and ice, it's critical that they have them on in those conditions. So they're generally pretty good.
And what would be your fondest memory, looking back in the time that you were driving the school buses out in the country areas?
Oh, I think seeing some of the older students as their time at school comes to an end. It's a big change in their life, and seeing some of their dreams come to fruition, seeing them get into careers that they want to get into. I still see kids around town that I drove locally who are now working, and they always say, g'day, hello, get a few cuddles. It's nice, and I know their parents, so it's good.
Sounds terrific. John, it's been wonderful to hear your stories today. Thank you very much for joining me.
Pleasure, thank you.
And look forward to talking to you again next time.
Thank you.
She packed my bags last night, pre-flight. 0 hour, 9 a.m. And I'm gonna be high as a kite by then. I miss the earth so much, I miss my wife. It's lonely out in space on such a timeless flight. And I think it's gonna be touchdown brings me round again to find I'm not the man they think I am at home. Oh no, 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 I'm a rocket man. Rocket man, burning out his fuse out of every home. And I think it's gonna be a long, long time till touchdown brings me round again. No one there to raise them. If you did, and all the science I don't understand, it's just my job 5 days.
Now, my next guest is Frank Wells. Frank has been driving school buses for 37 years now, and all of that time he's been driving country areas. Frank, tell me how you got involved in the school buses in the first place.
Well, it was something I hadn't intended to do in my life, but my father and I were operating a business in Bathurst, and a gentleman approached us to purchase that business, which we ultimately sold to him. And then after a short period of time, he suggested to me that he was interested in buying a school bus run, and asked myself, another employee at the time, if we were interested in becoming school bus drivers. Mm. And it was something that we'd never considered in our lives, but we thought, oh, well, we'll give it a go. And
so you were driving great big fuel trucks.
I was driving fuel trucks at the yeah. time, and so was my friend. He was also involved with us working in the same business, and we both got our bus licences on exactly the same day and commenced driving this school run when the purchaser of the fuel depot had bought the school run.
Have you always driven buses for the country area or in towns as well?
Yeah, no, I've always driven the country bus services, and the distinction between the country bus services are the actual country runs themselves, as distinct from what would be known as the town runs. So it's a completely different operation with what was known in the old days as country charter services, and then later on became non-commercial school bus runs, as distinct from the town service, which was described as a commercial school run. And the type of running is completely different, obviously, with the small country roads that we drive on and some highway work and so on. So that's how it operates.
So the run you're doing at the moment is the Mount Lambie run, isn't it?
That's correct.
So that's both highway and country roads?
That's right. We do the highway from Mount Lambie down to Rydal Turnoff, and then we do the spur roads on the way back, the range road across towards Portland, the road Wayalang Timberidge Road across towards Brawongal area, and then we do a loop in around the airport. But the majority of the run is done on the highway, and I cover a distance per day of around about 230 km on that bus run.
And in those 37 years, how many days a year are you driving?
Well, the school year operates 202 days of the year, and I've done the majority of those in that period of time. Obviously, I have had some breaks in the time, but in that period, it's some 7,200 odd days that I've driven school bus runs out there. So it all adds up.
And, lots of driving, yeah. I guess you've seen a number of changes over the years too since you started 37 years ago. Is it the buses themselves that are different? Are the kids different? Are the routes different? What are the major changes you've seen?
The routes are all much the same. In the early times, back in the 90s, there was 1,825 non-commercial school runs in New South Wales. And when we first started driving the buses, our early buses back were late model 70s buses, 1978 model Bedfords and so on. And those buses didn't have radios in them. And the first bus that I bought myself personally, because something I would say that after Jim had bought the initial bus runs, I thought to myself, well, this is not a bad sort of a a thing to be involved with. So I finished up buying three of my own runs as time went on. But my first bus that I bought didn't have a radio in it, and the kids wanted radios in the buses. So I fitted a radio to the bus and I put a cassette player in it. And the kids used to bring along their own cassettes and we'd play those. And that was their music at the time. But then I can remember one of the little girls came along and she had decided that she was going to record her own cassette. And she asked me if she could play it on the bus. And anyway, I put it on and started to play it on the bus. And it sounded a bit like a cat fight. So some of the other kids objected. So we had to cut that out. But ultimately, as time went on, they all finished up with their own little cassette players and all the headsets and everything they have these days. And we really don't need radios on buses anymore because they entertain themselves. So that part has changed.
Yeah, I bet it is.
The vehicles themselves have changed substantially over the years because, as I say, the old Bedford was a noisy old thing. And the bus I'm driving now is a Hino bus. And they're a magnificent vehicle as far as reliability and so on is concerned. And the one that I and presently driving is 20 years of age. It's due for replacement. In fact, it's going to be replaced this year, and I've done 865,000 kilometres in that bus. And apart from the normal wear and tear items, it's never let us down. It's a beautiful vehicle. But the new one, which we're going to get, I believe, is coming in May of this year. I'll be quite spoilt because we're getting an automatic transmission, which will be fantastic after changing gears all those years, and getting a bit more power and air conditioning. And that's exactly right. So it's going to be a fair difference to starting off in the old Bedford, I can tell you.
Yeah, no, that's good. What about the kids, though? I mean, you've been driving buses for 37 years. You obviously haven't got sick of it. There's something about being a bus driver for country kids. There must be.
Yeah, well, there is. You form a strong association with your kids on the bus, taking them every day. When I pick them up each morning, you're obviously picking up individually or as a family with two or three in the group. And I always say good morning to each of them individually by name when they get on the bus. I more or less insist they reply to me, you know, they say good morning, Frank, and that's our greeting of the morning. I couldn't imagine just walking on and ignoring anybody and just walking past them, but all my kids say good morning to me and I say good morning to them, and I know them all by name, and ultimately you know all their personalities, and we form our own little community within the bus, and it's little kids down the front, big kids up the back, and they associate between each other, but they normally do their own age groups, more or less. And if I have any problems with some of the little ones, that the bigger kids will assist me, particularly the older girls, you know, they're really good to ask for assistance. And they look after some of the smaller kids if they're a little bit homesick when they first start and things like that. They offer them comfort and talk to them and help look after them, and helps me drive and concentrate, but you form a very strong association with your children over a period of time. And
I guess you must get to know them very well.
You do. They tell you about their own personal lives. They tell you about, you know, family issues, which maybe they shouldn't tell you about. And you come close to the whole family, actually, because you get an understanding of their overall environment.
Can you give me an example of a student who you drove for a very long time and then they had children? I mean, intergenerational stuff happen?
Look, there's one in particular comes to my mind. I took this girl to school when she was very young, I suppose. She was from about 12 years of age until she left school. And when she left school, we parted ways, and then later on, she had been married and had her own children, and they bought a property on one of the spurs on the run that I was doing at the time, and we were more or less reintroduced, and I started carrying her children to school, and her eldest boy has now left school and he's studying university over in Newcastle. And the day that she introduced me to her youngest girl, or her only daughter, she carried her up onto the bus and she sat her on the steering wheel and she said, "There's another one for you." And I always remember the feeling that I had on that particular moment was that, you know, what an immense responsibility that I had with regard to taking these children to school, but also the trust and faith that she was putting in me to hand me her little daughter and put her on the steering wheel and say, "There's another one for you." So, you know, I really appreciate those sort of things, and I find it that part of the operation is an absolute privilege to have that trust placed in you. And
is that why you've been driving for such a long period of time?
I have, yeah.
I suppose you could have retired, not that
well. That's
a bit earlier.
That's my reasoning for it. I enjoy my association with the children, and I really like to see them grow and their changing environment over their lives with their schooling and so on. And I'm, you know, happy to help in anything I can to help them along with that process as they grow older and so on. And yeah, it's a unique association, I believe, and I appreciate it.
Now, I know that you obviously get to know the kids extremely well, and they probably get to know you very well. Tell me the story about one of the students who was finishing school and thinking about a particular career. Yeah. What was that story about?
Well, one of my boys on the bus, he was a very big boy. He had great big hands, I always remember, and he was very tall. He was possibly 6'3", 6'4", something like that, and he said to me one day, he said, "Frank," he said, "I think I'm going to join the Air Force." And I said, "Oh, okay." And I'd had a bit of an association with that type of thing because my brother was an Air Force officer himself, and I have had a private pilot's license. And I'd always sort of thought, with the pilots as not being great big men, the majority of them. So I looked at this particular boy and I thought, "Oh, maybe you're a bit big for that operation. But anyway, see what happens," sort of thing. And next thing you know, a few years had passed and I was operating in another business in town, and he walked through the door. And first thing I noticed of him actually when he walked in was that he had a wedding ring on. And I said, "Hello, mate, you got married?" And he said, yeah. He said, he had gone into officer training school with the RAF. He joined the RAAF, and his girlfriend at the time, they believe that they would get separated if he went away to officer training and all the rest, so they got married so they'd stay together. And he went through these training with the Air Force and finished up flying the Orions and Hercules and Caribou aircraft for the RAAF. So
yeah,
he stuck to his guns and he made the career he wanted.
It must be great to get that perspective of, you know, kids when they're tiny through to the end of schooling, and then occasionally having the opportunity to see them once they've grown to be adults. Probably could really only happen in a country area.
Yeah, it does. And it's funny, you sort of find it difficult to comprehend the change in time, because you see the kids intermittently through that period of time. You're not constantly with them. And when you have a change, even in a school holiday period of 6 weeks off or so, you can even see the change in them in that short period of time. But when you remember them as children and they come back to you as adults, it's hard to comprehend the change in the time. And it's, once again, one of those things that help you appreciate the job you do as far as operating the school bus run and being associated with these
kids.
It's
obviously a big responsibility, Frank.
There's a huge responsibility involved. That's the other side of it. People may not realise, but with a country service, particularly operating on a highway run as mine does, I've got to maintain speed with the traffic. I've got to pull off the road and pick up children and then re-enter the road. The buses were fitted with flashing lights at one stage with a sign on the back to say 40. A lot of you would realise that not too many people take notice of that. And therefore, particularly when you're re-entering the road, you've got to be very, very, very careful of the trucks passing the bus within close proximity. And there's an awareness that you have to maintain constantly on the road when you're driving, with travelling up to 100 kilometres an hour with school kids on the bus. And I have to maintain my vigilance out the front of the bus. And I also
have to keep eyes at the back of your head.
Keep an eye on what's going behind me. And the children are normally very, very good in that type of situation. And on occasions when I've had to speak to them about behaviour and so on when I'm driving, to help them understand the piece of road that I drive on, in the past 20-odd years that I've driven this area, there have been 32 fatalities on that area of road. So I'm conscious of the dangers involved and I have to keep a lookout at all times.
Obviously very, very important. You've been driving kids on the country run for all this period of time. Do you think there are any differences between kids on a town bus compared to kids on a country bus?
Look, I make my own assessment of this and I see a vast difference in the operation, in the fact that we get to know our children personally on the bus. We don't change drivers on a particular run unless we have to, and we maintain the association on a daily basis with the children that catch the bus, whereas local services are completely different. You don't get to know the children personally that come and go. They change quite regularly, the different children, whereas the ones on the country runs remain reasonably static for the whole period of their school life.
Mm. And you all get to know each other very well.
We certainly do.
Frank, it's been fantastic hearing your stories about your experiences on the bus, and I can tell that you've had a wonderful career, and I'm certain that the families and the children that you drive for have appreciated all of your efforts as well.
They really have appreciated my efforts, and they show me that sentiment when they greet me.
Oh, no, that's wonderful. Frank, thank you very much for joining the program today.
Thank you, Susan.
You've been listening to Cool Climate Living. I'm Susan Lacey. Now, what you may not know is that you can participate in Radio 2MCE in more ways than listening to this program. You can subscribe. For every subscription, we can deliver great community radio and you even get some freebies. Subscribers can also get involved with 2MCE's online presenters or behind-the-scenes volunteers. Subscribers help with equipment upgrades and new technology and resources and presenter training. So if you'd like to know more about how to become a subscriber, go to our website. Thanks for joining me today. See you soon.
Here's to the ones that we got. Cheers to the wish you were here, but you're not. Cause the drinks bring back all the memories of everything we've been through. Toast to the ones in today. Toast to the ones that we lost on the way. Cause the drinks bring back all the memories, and the memories bring back your. There's a time that I remember when I did not know no pain, when I believed in forever and everything would stay the same. Now my heart feels like December when somebody say your name. Cause I can't reach out to call you, but I know I will one day, yeah. Everybody hurts sometimes, everybody hurts someday, yeah, yeah. But everything gon' be alright, gon' raise a glass and say, yeah. Here's to the ones that we got. Cheers to the wish you were here, but you're not. Cause the dreams bring back all the memories of everything we've been through. Toast to the ones here today. Toast to the ones that we lost on the way. Cause the drinks bring back all the memories, and the memories bring back your. Memories bring back your. There's a time that I remember when I never felt so lost, and I felt all of the hatred was too powerful to stop. And my heart feel like an ember, and it's lighting up the dark. I'll carry these torches for ya, and you know I'll never drop. Yeah. Everybody hurts sometimes, everybody hurts someday, yeah, yeah. But everything gon' be alright, gon' raise a glass and say, hey. Here's to the ones that we got, cheers to the wish you were here, but you're not. Cause the drinks bring back all the memories of everything we've been through. Toast to the ones here today. Toast to the ones that we lost on the way. Cause the drinks bring back all the memories. And the memories bring back, memories bring back your. Memories bring back memories.